Hello, and welcome to Hard Fried History, a hybrid history
and comedy
podcast run by two aspiring entertainers.
Podcast, it's more of a rant, really.
That have failed at almost everything else.
I don't fail because I don't try, so there.
We appreciate you checking us out, and if you want to see extra content, follow us on Instagram or give us a like on Facebook at Hard Fried History.
Subscribe to us on YouTube or tell us we're full of shit on Twitter at HFH Podcast.
Feel like going that extra mile? Give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Or wherever you're listening, and leave us a flattering, a glowing review.
And of course, tell your friends, family, and even people you don't like about us.
That's right. Again, thank you for listening, and without further ado, the episode. Hey, what's up? Welcome back, or welcome to Hard Fried History. We got a good one for you today. It's both equal parts tragic and at some parts hilarious. Am I a bad person for thinking so?
I'm going to tell you right now.
Hear me out, all right?
Now that I don't believe it, I don't think it's important. I am going
to
give
you... It's not a matter of believing it. It's substantiated.
It's like believe
they've,
it. I believe
they've
it.
Copped to it.
Okay. I believe it. I'm not saying I don't believe it.
But you're not surprised.
I just don't care, and I'm not surprised.
It's not a surprising thing that this has occurred. This is introducing a new thing that we're going to start doing on Hard Fried History called the History Wormhole, which is basically something that we've kind of touched on in the past but didn't really get a chance to thoroughly investigate, or there was more to it that we wanted to explore. And Henry, that's what we're doing. This is the first one. You know, here we are.
Henry wanted to call this history fetishes. And I was like, nah, gee, that's not good.
Fetishists?
I was like, history fetishes.
Like, history fetishes. Yeah, for all the horny history guys out there. You know, you want to talk about Little Big Horn Brother? I'm here for you, man.
Yeah, that's like a weird vibe. It,
you know?
A weird crew of, bros would come through this podcast.
This is the source that we've got for it, because I did read this. It is called The Devil's Chessboard by David Talbot, published 2015, and it is full of juicy morsels and secrets, including a whole chapter on MKUltra, which is the source, plus some stuff that I found online, because I needed more, frankly. But here we go. The origins of the program that would come to be known as MKUltra actually lie in the Korean War. So in 1952 and 1953, the USSR, China, and North Korea are all raising a big stink about the fact they're all making these allegations that the U.S. has been engaging in chemical warfare over the course of the war, because there are outbreaks of like smallpox and anthrax and cholera and even like bubonic plague.
Yeah.
In North Korea and China while the war's going on. It's like, well, this isn't really prevalent amongst our civilian population. It kind of only occurred, it's only been found in soldiers and or people who have been near battlefields and everything where bombs have been dropped. What's going on? And so the U.S. government vehemently denies the fact that it's been dropping, it's been using chemical weapons, right? Yeah. But there are, according to Talbot, this is where Talbot comes in, 36 captured U.S. pilots. The two I could find online, two names, are Colonels Frank Schwabel and Walker Mahurin.
Okay.
They admitted that they had flown B-29 bombers from Okinawa with chemical weapons.
Okay.
And then Talbot says that the airmen retract their statements after the U.S. government threatened to try them for treason.
Mm-hmm.
And so the pilots begin to say that response to, you know, the threat that they would be tried for treason, they're like, oh, no, the reason I said that we had been using chemical weapons is because while while I was a POW,
yeah.
I had been subject to brainwashing, mm-hmm. to communist brainwashing. Mm-hmm. Okay. And they told me to say this, that way they would have another arrow in their quiver to you know, raise a big stink about and make the U.S. look bad, right? Yeah,
okay. I mean, I mean, look, we weren't too shy in, like, World War II about dropping bombs on civilians, so, like, necessarily the step up from like bombs to fucking dirty bombs, yeah. it's not that far of a step.
Really. I'm not gonna, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm also not inclined to disbelieve it. You know, I'm not like, oh, we wouldn't do that because I've read some of it. It's like, yeah, we would go there, you know?
Yeah.
But also, I don't know how well substantiated it is. Whatever, but Talbot's the guy. You know, he's saying this is what occurred, and I'm like, okay, I am not as well versed in this, so I have no choice but to kind of go with what's been said.
And I mean, you know, there could be communist brainwashing. I mean,
everybody I guess does it. I don't know. Everybody hurts. You know,
if you take like food from people and just like beat them until everybody breaks at a certain point.
Yeah.
Every single body. You think you're a tough guy? Give it a couple months.
Give it a couple months.
Yeah, I mean.
Go on, Survivor. See get how enough tough you really are.
Fake executions first thing in the morning for 3 months straight, and you'll be able. You'll
get a little more paranoid.
Yeah,
You'll be a little more willing to talk. A little less resolute, shall we say?
Yeah.
And this is in response to the pilot saying that they had been brainwashed by a communist. This is where this author, Edward Hunter, who is this self-described like propaganda specialist, and he's like vehemently anti-communist. He testifies before Congress, because I guess there's an investigation going on, about how like through a mixture of kind of like experimentation with new forms of torture and mind control, the American pilots had been quote unquote brainwashed. He's the originator of the term. I'm pretty sure he's the guy, Edward Hunter is the guy who coined the term brainwashing.
Let me tell you something. I don't know what happened. I don't know if they're dropping bombs, dirty bombs. I don't know if these people were brainwashed. But one thing I do know is there's always going to be an American expert.
Always going to be some guy who's like, I've been saying this for years.
Close around the guy who wrote the book talking about, I know about brain. There's always that guy.
There's always that guy willing to step into the limelight. Like, you know what? I've been spouting crazy shit for 20 years, and finally I can launch this book about homeopathy. Finally I have a platform, right?
Every news network currently has 5 different terrorist experts on their payroll, and like the expert is highly questionable.
Okay.
And where do you get your degree in terrorism from?
Expert or like expert. Some YouTube guy.
Yeah.
You know? Like, okay, cool. So June 1952, as part of this prior CIA mind control operation known as Operation Artichoke, named for Alan Dulles, the director of Central Intelligence of the CIA, named for his favorite vegetable, Operation Artichoke. Frank Olson, who was a CIA biochemist, he arrives in Frankfurt, Germany to work at Camp King, which is I think it's a little north of Frankfurt. It's one of the many quote unquote black sites strung throughout the world. Like there's a Camp Detrick in Maryland. That's another black site for the CIA. They have some spots in like England, France, Norway, the Philippines, and Tokyo that I've come across. And then they're not only on foreign soil, as with Camp Detrick in Maryland, they're also on, you know, within the borders of the United States itself. They end up including around 30 different universities, including but not limited to Stanford, Harvard, and Columbia, where the CIA is conducting these attempted mind control experiments and just seeing what they can do.
I mean, you join the CIA, you know, for country or whatever,
you get into it, then it's, you know, it's a lot of oppressing foreign peoples and bidding them to like capital's whims. But you stay at the CIA for the travel opportunities. That's what you
travel
stay.
Opportunities, man. I've always wanted to see the world.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, I mean, look, they it's willing to travel. That is on
that's,
the
that's a that's prerequisite for
CIA's
for,
that's Bumble.
On the docket, you know.
It's on their Bumble.
Willingness to forge docket. Do you want to see the world?
See the world? Do you want to destroy some of it also?
You want to destroy parts of it? Better than see the world, do you want to remake it in your image?
Yeah, and that is.
What are we talking about, guys?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah.
Camp King. It was a former Nazi interrogation spot for British and United States POWs, but it was reclaimed by the Allies. And then by 1948, according to Talbot, it was operated by a combination of like weirdo CIA scientists and ex-Nazi doctors. And like the first whispers or inklings of like psychedelics being used to try to change the way people think is like the Nazis use mescaline on prisoners in Dachau. And so there are kind of like whispers of this, and it's all based in Nazi science, and the CIA is not above this, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing about the CIA, dog. They love Nazi science.
Not even just the CIA, like NASA too. You know, there's a large backbone, or there was a market for these guys. Sadly,
I mean, this it's like that moment when like oh, how isn't this horrible? Like you walk into a situation with like a friend, and your friend's like, oh, this isn't this horrible, and you're just like, let's take a step back here. This might not be as bad.
is it bad? Is it as horrible as we would all think it is? You got to say all with your pinky up, like this sort of revolting contrarianism that is like, are you even a human anymore? Or are you just equivocating for the sake of equivocating?
You know? Get you a sports coat.
Get you a sports coat.
Get you a sports coat always. You can do anything. Sports coat. Yeah. Nobody questions you when you're in a sports coat. That's a real life fact for me. Nobody questions a man in a sports coat.
You rocking a sports coat, man?
No, I have on a shirt right now, as you can see if you're watching this on YouTube.
No, I mean in your everyday life, if you rock
oh,
a
sports
coat.
Oh, no, I haven't gotten there yet. I'm going to print this to a sports coat.
Man, you're on your way to sports coat dumb.
With the patches, with the elbow patch. Come on.
Of course. Mm-hmm. I used to do a character. I don't want to talk about this.
Yeah, please don't ruin our podcast with your character.
He dressed in patches.
Okay.
And I couldn't tie the tie, so I had to hold the tie together. Anyway, speaking about like Dachau and like former Nazi doctors and everything.
Yeah.
Some Nazi doctors were able to leverage the results of the horrific experiments that they conducted at concentration camps throughout Europe, really, at Nuremberg. Okay. And basically while they're on trial and everything, they're saying like, hey, we did all these fucked up experiments that normal human ethics would not allow. And you can take me to the chair, but basically I know where the codex is buried.
Yeah.
And if I die, you're not gonna know. And so some guys were able to get off because they knew where the shit was, and we were not above taking that science and kind of like building upon it, I guess, and being like, oh, okay, this is the temperature that normal human bodies freeze at, or whatever else, you know, whatever sort of weird horrific shit they were doing.
That's there's that whole race at the end of World War II between the Soviets and the Americans and the British people for all the scientists. And then the Wernher von Braun and NASA, and he just legitimately ran a concentration camp, or like at least was heavily involved in a concentration camp to build rockets. And he just became our NASA guy, and we're like celebrating him helping us get to the moon. And we're like, wasn't that motherfucker at a con?
Wasn't he in charge of a concentration camp?
Yeah.
We're just kind of like, you know,
We went to the moon. Okay, what does that mean? And they're just like, I don't know.
So following Nuremberg in 1948, there's the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, whereby they state, no physical or mental torture, nor any other form of coercion may be inflicted on prisoners of war to secure from them information of any kind whatsoever. So very clearly, the UN is establishing kind of this global precedent for how POWs will be treated, that they, you know, it's almost like an expansion of the Eighth Amendment, if you want to think, no cruel or unusual punishment, only now it's global, right?
I mean, okay. I mean, there's some doubts about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like the UN will pass something and everybody will be like, oh, yes, this is great. We should all do what the UN says. And then
I'm talking about the Eighth Amendment. I mean, honestly. Yeah, but that's a different podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So another guy who is vital to the operations of Camp King is this guy, Henry Knowles Beecher. Camp King was kind of his headquarters. He's the chief anesthesiologist at the Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston, and he's brought to Camp King to help the CIA research ways to induce amnesia in any Soviet spies that they might have found. Wow. And Beecher, he begins reading the work of a bunch of like Nazi doctors.
Yeah.
And he becomes one of the early advocates of, or the earliest advocates of LSD as like an offensive weapon. The thinking being that he was on kind of like this quest. And like he experimented with other drugs and stuff as well. But he's on like a quest for the quote unquote like truth serum. Okay. That would get the spies to spill all of their tea in the event that they were captured.
Okay. I mean, they have the Soviets already have like a truth serum, not truth serum, amnesia like serum. Have you heard of theirs?
I haven't.
You haven't? It's just one bullet behind the back of your ear.
That'll do it, man. That is forget everything.
The Soviets love that vibe.
You know, that's a good way to get it done.
Nobody
you
know, will cost. Ever hear about one bullet. They love that. Back of the ear, behind the ear.
You forget everything you ever knew, all right? Nobody will remember your memories. Nobody will remember anything that you ever said. No, you will never speak again. Dead men tell no tales, right?
You know, I mean, one good thing about the gulag is if you're in the gulag, you are technically still alive.
Mm-hmm.
If you get pulled out of your gulag cell and you get that one bullet behind the back of that ear, well,
amen.
You were
a thin line on the gulags. Yeah. You know, you were there, you're like, oh shit, I better keep busting up these rocks and not worry, but not say anything about it. I love busting up rocks. This is my life's prayer. I've always wanted to bust up. Thank the dear leader for allowing me the opportunity to bust up rocks.
Thank you to all of the high, I don't know what their committee's called, but whatever. The Kremlin. Yeah, thank you to the Kremlin.
Praise be the Kremlin.
Yeah.
And Frank Olson, the guy we mentioned prior to the CIA biochemist, he gets back from his trip to Frankfurt, where he was working at Camp King. And he basically like falls into a depression because of all of the, because he has a conscience and all the horrific shit that he was doing is kind of like catching up to him. And to use the words of his family, he was then facing a quote unquote moral crisis.
Yeah.
So getting into the actual formation of MK Ultra, because it hasn't been branded as that yet, it's still been Operation Artichoke. That is the roots of MK Ultra. No pun intended. Actually, pun intended.
Okay, you stop. I thought about that. Stop and move on. Move on.
April 10th, 1953. Dulles gives a speech about the Soviet Union's newest secret weapon, which is brain warfare. Okay. It's a conference of Princeton alums in Hot Spring, Virginia, which is where he first espouses this. And he says during his speech, he says that the human mind is the most delicate of all instruments. It is so finely adjusted, so susceptible to the impact of outside influences, that it is proving a malleable tool in the hands of sinister men. And this is kind of indicative of and he's talking about the Soviets. I should clarify when he says this rather than himself, even though it applies to himself, right? And it's indicative that he's like, or of a different facet of the arms race, and that this is more like a research race and that we need to have this competitive advantage. It's not really a traditional weapon as you would think of it. It's more of a, it is a weapon, but it's a, it's kind of like a tool. It's not a weapon in that it kills people. It's a weapon in that it's a something you can deploy against the enemy, and it requires more research than it does like, oh, me make the big boom, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so the Soviets, he also says in his speech that the Soviets were seeking to control people's minds by, quote-unquote, washing the brain clean of the thoughts and mental processes of the past. So returning the brain to just this blank slate, tabula rasa, where you can rewrite the new codes, right? And he makes this announcement at this like private conference of Princeton alum, but he also, I don't know if he distributes his speech exactly, at least his talking points, and he kind of like flushes that turd through the media while still being fully aware that a couple days prior to that meeting on in April, he had already authorized the MKUltra program with the initial budget of $300,000, said that it would be the quote-unquote Manhattan Project of the mind. And he decried that in contrast to the Soviet Union, the U.S. didn't really have like a ready supply of human guinea pigs. And so they needed people who, I guess, in their minds, they needed to find people who nobody would care about, who again, in their minds, deserved, quote-unquote, to be experimented on. People such as, like, turncoats and traitors to their nation, or Soviet spies that they had ratted out, or defectors, or heroin addicts, or any, and these are kind of the stock of the MK Ultra program. The people that are funneled into the program are people who nobody would really feel a lot of sympathy for. One of the architects of the program, or a key hinge in the program, is this guy, Dr. Sidney Gottlieb, and we've mentioned him in the podcast before. He is the head of the CIA's Technical Service Staff, or TSS, which is like their biochemics division, and it had to do with like biochemical torture and all this new experimental mind control bullshit, and also assassination methods, where we mentioned him before. He's the guy who tried to put poison inside of Patrice Lumumba's toothbrush. Mm-hmm. He reports to Alan Dulles, or I'm sorry, he reported in his book, like later testimony, and then Talbot cites that he said that Dulles had repeatedly asked him and kind of like grilled him about a chemical compound that could make select individuals commit acts of substantial sabotage or acts of violence, including murder, even against their own conscience. So it's very clear what Dulles is looking for. He's looking to basically make kind of an army of whimsical dummies, or not whimsical dummies. He's looking to just kind of bombard people with enough drugs that their brain is, that their brain, they become susceptible to directives from the CIA, and they can deploy these like sleeper agents
as agents.
As agents, yeah, as cold warriors, yeah. as perpetrators of the Cold War, as whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Competitive advantage.
Yeah.
But it's not all about, like, mind control and everything. He's also looking into, like, drugs that could knock people out. Because, like, the whole biochemistry division, it's not just mind control. It's like, we want drugs that knock people out. We want, like, barbiturates. We want drugs that cause delirium. We want drugs that, like, decrease motivation and productivity, perhaps preferably in a gaseous form. That way we can just maybe fly over some Soviet steel factory and release all of this productivity decreasing gas and just make sure that this Soviet Union isn't meeting their steel quotas or whatever. Yeah. We want drugs that make the user more dependent on another person and perhaps more gullible. But they also want like strength increasing drugs, you know, like a physical type of, like, not just mental Adderall, but like physical Adderall, like steroids, you know?
Yeah.
Drugs that would allow patients to withstand inordinate amounts of physical torture. That way, if our guys get caught, they're not gonna rat, because they're like, ha ha ha, you think your drugs can penetrate my shell. I'm on, I've got the best shit around, you know?
I mean,
like
mean,
PCP levels.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, PCP, all that stuff weighs off. And I'm telling you, at that yeah. third month of those mock executions will really get you.
Will really wear you down.
Really tear you down. I'm just going to say that right now.
That is the mock executions are the cheese grater, and you are the block of cheese that eventually you get shredded, man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You get worn down. You end up flaky. Right there, we go.
Right. You just piss your pants every time they open the door, and then there you're that guy, and that guy tells all the secrets.
Nervous guy, yeah. and nervous guy talks every time.
Exactly.
There's a 2018 article. The most recent thing to come out about the MK Ultra program, because I don't know if they've declassified all the documents. I kind of doubt that they've had. 2018 article says that there was another thing that they were doing, which is trying to work on like remote controlled dogs. Like they were implanting, I don't even know what you call them, like little plants inside of a dog's brain that would transmit electrical impulses to certain centers in the dog's brain and get them to act a certain way, and basically working on like cyborg dogs or cyborg implants that you could put inside of people to get them to do certain things. And
cancer is just running wild.
Cancer is rampant.
This is the rampant disease, and we're just about the remote control dogs.
What can we do? What can we do with Fido over here? All right, there's a real market for this. So November of 1953, there is a I don't know if it's a CIA retreat. I believe it's a CIA retreat, but I don't know if it was exclusively limited to CIA guys. Yeah. Is what I'm trying to say, for special operations officers or SO. In Maryland at Deep Lake Creek. And Frank Olson, the guy who was working at Camp King in Frankfort, and some others are in attendance, including Dr. Gottlieb. And according to Talbot, Gottlieb spikes a bottle of Cointreau, and Olson, who had been like facing this moral crisis for what he had done, and he's got information because he's like plugged in and everything, he enters a delirium. And I've heard that they did spike him with like a bunch of LSD. I don't really know if it was that or if it was some other experimental weirdo compound that they had been working on, but he is like you know, freaking out for like a week. And they're popping them around from place to place, facility to facility, safe house to safe house, whatever, until finally he, quote-unquote, falls out of a window of the Statler Hotel, which is now the Hotel Pennsylvania, even though he had been in this drug-induced delirium, probably by Gottlieb, for like a week now, which would be an absolute nightmare. 1994, Frank Olson's remains are exhumed, and another autopsy is conducted. The doctor finds evidence that head and chest trauma had occurred prior to the fall, which the committee reinvestigating the murder called rankly and starkly suggestive of homicide.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So they knew he was becoming the nervous guy, and they were just like, "All right, we gotta kill this guy before he blabs."
Yeah, and that was like somebody's vacation in the 50 CIA. Like that was like
they were looking forward to it. You know?
Yeah, like it was like, "Oh, I don't have to kill Guatemalans anymore." Like, I get a break from doing that, then I get to just kill this guy.
I get to hang out with my friends, man. Yeah. I can hang with my buddies, and then your buddies kill you. Cool.
Yeah, I mean.
1954. Alan Dulles, the kind of the architect behind the whole thing, if you want to think of him like that, because he is the leader of the CIA. He turns his son, Alan Dulles Jr., this guy, they call him Sonny. He had sustained a head injury while fighting in Korea, over to Dr. Harold Wolf, who is chief of the neurology department at New York Hospital, the Cornell Medical Center. And Wolf is one of the leading mind control experts for the CIA. And Alan Dulles' own son is subject to, like, insulin shock therapy, mm-hmm. which was, like, used on schizophrenic people to try to, like, jolt them into what we think of as rationality. Mm-hmm. And it can result in, like, a coma or convulsions, but Dulles Sr. doesn't care. He just wants his son back. But the fact that he was willing to turn his son basically over to the program, because Wolf ends up Wolf is implicated in the MK Ultra program. He's one of the guys, one of the doctors. And so Alan Dulles ends up, like, feeding his own son to the program virtually. And the same thing with his niece, Edith, to where she was subject to like a lobotomy as a result of her depression. And he doesn't give a shit. He's like an evil dude, I think.
You know what's good for my paranoid schizophrenic delusions is,
what's that?
Real fucked up shit happening in my life.
That's shock therapy. Man.
That's really good.
Shock for therapy.
How? What's gonna?
You know what really helps my paranoid distrust of all authority figures is having an authority figure take me into a dungeon. Uh-huh. Shackle me to a table and pump me full of juice and shock the shit out of me until I don't even know, you know?
Yeah. No, that's really,
it's always worked for me.
Yeah. You know?
I just get out of there and I'm like, oh, I feel worlds better.
Who was the dude who saw this shit and was like, oh, we should try that on gay people? Cause there was obviously some dude who was like, yeah, that would work to make people not gay anymore. It's like wrong.
It's really wrong.
Like,
it's crazy. They thought of the human mind as though it were like Boggle or some shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where you've got these words and like somebody who, in their definition, like needs help or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, all we have to do to get their brain to think correctly or to spell the right word according to this metaphor is just shake it up a bunch.
Yeah.
You know, if you keep shaking that brain enough of the shit, the neurons will knock together and it'll spell something, right? So to speak.
This is also like, if you smoke cigarettes, it's actually healthy for your time period. So
exactly. So, yeah, I mean, yeah.
But at the same time, like, even in that, like, they already knew.
It's only 70 years ago. And it's like, whoa.
I shouldn't let them off the hook because they already knew that it was bad for you. They were just, they just kept doing it because, like, it was promoted by the company. The company was like, it's good.
It's fine. Yeah. And doctors would be smoking and tell you that it's great. There was it was Bernays, I think, who was the guy who made it cool for women to smoke by linking, it was like the suffragettes were out and about and fighting for women's rights to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bernays got the idea of equating woman's right to vote with a woman's right to smoke.
Yeah.
And it was just like, this is smoking is liberation. It's like, it's actually, I guess, I don't know, maybe.
I mean, you should, I mean, women can do whatever they want, but smoking will.
Anybody can smoke, but.
Smoking will kill you.
It will kill you,
Yes, it'll murder.
So also implicated in the MKUltra program are these Canadian doctors, Wilder, I think Wilder Penfield, and Donald Ewan Cameron, who are both neurosurgeons at Montreal's McGill University. There's this place specifically, the Allen Memorial Institute, and I don't know if that's named specifically for Dulles or if it's just a coincidence that they're both named Allen. Mm-hmm. It became a hub for the CIA's mind control program. And whatever experiments they would conduct or wanted to conduct was funded by the CIA through the Society for the Investigation of Human Ecology, which sounds reasonable enough, I guess, if you're not really like thinking about it or you don't really want to look into it. Mm-hmm. And it's basically just a CIA front where they would use to channel funds into whatever institute they needed to, including these Canadian ones, but also, like we've discussed, there are like 30 universities in America who are also down, you know? The Allen Memorial Institute in Canada is where the famous, or infamous rather, the sleep room is. And it is run by Donald Ewan Cameron. The methods he used there included like shock therapy, lobotomies and like massive doses of LSD designed to quote unquote depattern the brain and cleanse it of bad behavior patterns, replace the bad thoughts, the bad feelies with good thoughts and good feelies through psychic driving, where it's basically just like Boggle, where if you just shake the shit enough, or if you just like hammer away a mess, it's like a fucking nightmare scenario, really. Is you're freaking out because you're tripping balls, and he would just play a message that was like simplistic, and it would just repeat very loudly in this room over speakers, and you would just be like tied down for like 8 hours, whacked out of your mind, and just like whatever message you had, like, we are good, we are good, we are good, or whatever weird shit he wanted you to hear would like play while you were just tied down and totally like, I just want to get out of here, man. I'm kind of freaking out.
I'm not gonna tell you why I'm laughing. That's to me personally, and that's not for anybody else.
Okay, that's fine. that's fine. Probably most famously, or I don't even know if this is the time frame that Talbot gives, but I've heard other things. Apparently, Dr. Ewan Cameron, he bombarded 7 patients with LSD for 77 straight days as a form of experimental addiction treatment, which it seems like if you're trying to get somebody to not be an addict, the last thing to do would be to like bombard them with psychoactives.
Yeah,
I don't know, man. And just the idea of tripping for 77 days straight is horrible.
Like, it's just wild that this man, this doctor, is straight like just acting like a shaman when he's never been to shaman school. This is shaman territory, dog. You go to the rainforest for this. I don't go to Montreal.
Montreal's the last place to learn from some academically established doctor.
Man. I go to a five foot indigenous man named Pedro, and he teaches me the ways of ayahuasca. That's how I cure maybe some bad feelings that I have had. There's a Netflix documentary about that. I'll trust that one, but I'm not trusting a dude named Donald to do that. I'm sorry.
Never trust a Donald, right?
Yeah.
Donald Ewan Cameron, are you kidding? No, I don't wanna trip with Donald Ewan Cameron, all right?
I trip only with Pedros.
I trip with Pedros.
Indigenous Amazonian
and they walk me through it, and I know he's looking out for me. I know he's not going to take me down some dark hole. I know we're here as part of a broader experience and a broader thing, and that's cool, and that's why I trust him.
I've been in Peru for 4 months now, just trying to figure out which one's the guy, and this is the guy who gives me good feeling. So I'm with him, and then I spend another 3 months in his village, and then I come out, and I don't need to do this podcast anymore.
That's right, man. I don't need to do anything.
I just need to.
I need to fish.
Yeah.
That's what I need to do. Yeah. I need to fish. So, getting back to the horror stories, after we go to that nice paradise.
Yeah, because that's nice
head above the clouds of all the bullshit.
This is
back to the evil.
This is the horror story of like those type of psychoactive drugs.
Yeah,
when like this can be done responsibly.
Yeah, no, I'm a firm believer that everybody should do LSD at least once, twice.
Firm believer
in that. Let me tell you.
But the difference between Pedro and Donald, Pedro actually like wants to heal you because he actually like sees this as his purpose. Donald just wants to do some shit for the CIA, which is never
Donald
a good way.
Has a complex, maybe due to some prior childhood trauma that makes him a crazy person who just kind of wants to inflict pain on people, and that's not cool. And let me say, when I think everyone should do LSD at least once, that is Henry saying this. That is not the position of Hard Fright History. For whatever that is, Henry's
position. We can make
that is the position of Hard Fright. Everybody needs
actually,
to do LSD.
You know what? That is not the position of Hard Fright History because Josh
walking it back.
Josh Stokes has a job.
Walking it back. Yeah, walking it back. That is is Henry's sole position. Everybody does LSD.
If you are in a place where it is loud. All right, let's move on.
And if you're in a nice, safe place around people you trust.
Let's move on from this.
Fucking talk to God, man. Anyway.
Okay.
Back to the horror stories. Okay. There's a woman who supposedly like broke her teeth and fractured her spine due to the convulsions from electric shock, just to give you an idea how fucking awful it was there.
Yeah.
And Ewan Cameron is mostly dealing with people who went to him with like anxiety and depression, and like specifically a lot of women who had postpartum depression. And, you know, Ewan Cameron's like, you know what? I got just the thing, even though he definitely does not.
Yeah.
Naomi Klein, who I think was one of his victims, she writes that, quote, he was a genius at destroying people, but he could not remake them, which kind of undermines the whole pillar of the philosophy, which is that we're tabula rasa and then we're going to write what we put on, which is still fucked up, but anyway. Or he couldn't heal them, I guess. Yeah. But she says he could not remake them, but the idea being he couldn't heal them.
Yeah.
All of the facilities and all of the black sites that they had, they were not all on foreign soil. There's this this sub-operation under the umbrella of MKUltra known as Midnight Climax. All right. That took place in San Francisco, Marin County, California, and NYC as well. They would use sex workers to like lure men to CIA safe houses and then dose them with LSD, probably without their knowledge, and then basically just, like, watch what happened through a two-way mirror and just kind of record it all.
Yeah.
You get real creepy vibes from this. Like, let's just see what...
And cancer's still just running wild.
And cancer's still just running around doing crazy shit. There's a bunch of... Yeah.
These are the same people tell you can't have Medicare for all.
We need that competitive advantage, man.
Yeah.
The Soviets get to it first. They're going to establish sleeper agents inside of the White House, and they're going to kill the president get access to the nuclear codes. We got to make sure that we have the sleeper agents.
And then the Soviets, they want to do some of their stuff, but then they were like, damn, we shot that dude behind the ear that could do some of that stuff.
Damn, man. Yeah. We fucking killed that guy 10 years ago.
Yeah, put that dude in the gulag.
Why?
And then murdered him. Like,
God damn.
Yep, that happens.
Fucking Stalin. Come on, bro.
The purges, dog. Purge.
And purges, man. Yeah. Cream of the crop is dead, right?
Yeah, he's gone.
So one of the guys who was subject, or I don't know if he was a part or a victim or a participant, in his view, of Operation Midnight Climax, but Ken Kesey.
No.
Or Kesey, Ken Kesey.
Yeah.
He's the author of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Mm-hmm.
He like offered to be a subject of the MK Ultra program while at Stanford. And, you know, he gets dosed with LSD and then mm-hmm. becomes like a full-fledged advocate
mm-hmm.
for the drug.
Yeah.
And he would just kind of throw these crazy LSD parties where everybody would just like, oh, let's listen to the Grateful Dead, man. And, oh, you wanna play around with my black light? Like, oh, bro, I just got this lava lamp, man. You want to just hang out with my lava lamp, bro? You know?
No, I refuse to let you do that to these people. Because these people are the real ones. They're the ones.
These are the OGs.
Yeah, they're the real. True. They're the real, like, these are, like, the people who are seriously trying to take their mind places. The real, like, San Francisco 1960s motherfuckers. Now, all the perpetrating ass niggas that come later, we can do that to them. But these
You're saying they not the real ones?
No, But you know how culture works. After a certain point, it's just an imitation of an imitation of an imitation of an imitation. It's just not even. It has none of the original juice. But these motherfuckers, they were really trying to do that.
I bet this still happened. But I don't know if it's exclusive. I don't know if I would demonize the drug so much as the people. Let's say that.
Do LSD parties? You talking about? Do you think LSD parties still happen? Are you asking that question?
Yeah, but they're not as pure. I see what you mean. They're not as like.
No. I'm saying these. Yeah, I don't know about the people now. Like, you know what I mean? This. You know, I mean, look. Well, come on. We all listen to Joe Rogan. Gonna do some DMT after this.
Yeah, bro. Yeah. I thought it was just interesting that like a cornerstone, and there were like other some more notable artists who like volunteered for the MK Ultra program, mm-hmm. and every once in a while you get some weirdo who would just come around and tell you, you know, you're just like too drunk at the bar or whatever, and some dude with a ponytail would just be like, yeah, I was a participant in the MK Ultra program way back when. It's like, okay, dude.
These guys exist.
These guys are,
I mean, it's real. Like, it's very real. It's just...
It happened to people. I don't know if somebody's just trying to make that their thing or not, you know?
No, I mean...
Like, okay, bro, you need a line. That's cool. Yeah, I get it. But just don't fucking do this to me.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like a lot of this hatred is coming from times you spent in garages with people that you don't want to associate with anymore.
Oh, bro.
Yeah, no. Let's not tell the story.
Because
if you don't want to live there...
Dudes that would come through my uncle's music store, and I was like a teenager, and I would just get these bum-ass Virginian musicians coming through and talking to me about crazy shit. And I was like,
I'm a
kid. You know, I don't know what you're talking about.
Hey, man. Look here. It's always from a place of just like, yeah, they're bum-ass Virginia musicians, but we're also bum-ass Texas comics. So
they passed the baton, bro.
Yeah,
it was a handoff, you know? They indoctrinated the next generation, you know? Now I feel like I can safely tell everyone that I am actually a participant or a victim of the MK Ultra programs. And
it doesn't work because you're not that old.
No, so you see,
the way you think it does.
But listen, bro.
No. I get what you're trying to do here, but it doesn't work. It doesn't work.
But that's just what they want you to think, man. That's just what they want you to think, man.
I will continue this podcast on my own if I have to.
I'm going rogue.
All right.
So, I just thought it was interesting. I wanted to bring that whole point up because there's like those kind of weird, trippy LSD parties. They're like a cornerstone or become a cornerstone of like 60s counterculture. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was interesting that that has like origins in CIA Black Ops because you never know, man. You never know what domino you're gonna hit next, right?
Yeah.
So Gottlieb, Dr. Joseph, Dr. Gottlieb and the others like Dulles and everybody, they're also, you know, like we've mentioned, they're interested in increasing the suggestibility of people, and maybe they'll like drug a high-ranking official of some country behind the Iron Curtain, like before a summit or whatever. That way they're more susceptible to whatever we're trying to put down, or like knocked off their mental balance, right? But they have to test how to drug these officials without them knowing it, need to figure out like the best method of delivery and the right dosage amounts and et cetera. And so in like, I don't know when exactly, in the 50s and early 60s, there's like a period of time where impromptu trips became an occupational hazard among CIA agents. Mm-hmm. So just imagine you're at work and you take a sip of your coffee, and about 45 minutes later, you just look down at your hands and you're like, oh no. You know, like it's you feel yourself going up the roller coaster hill, right? And you're like, oh shit, got all these CIA guys with guns who are just like, well, I'm tripping.
Yep. Now. Yep. It's just you know what I mean? It's part of the work day, and it's part of your day. Your day is just, you have a lot of people have different days, and as long as nobody, you know,
a lot of people have different stresses while on the job, you know.
Yeah, I mean, look, anything to get me away from the kids I killed in Guatemala. That's what I say.
Oh, if anything, I think they would come to the forefront. If anything, it wouldn't be like La La Land. It'd be like, oh my god.
I mean, if you're on a good trip or a bad trip.
Am I working for these bastards? You know,
if that's a good trip or a bad trip, and that's, you know, that's all about the environment with you, with within your in set or whatever.
Yeah, and what you're thinking about, you're going through, you know.
Yeah.
So, rounding it all out, getting to the tail end of MK Ultra, supposedly, right?
Okay.
1973.
Jesus Christ. Yo, we gotta finish this podcast.
We're almost done. Yeah. In the aftermath of Watergate, the program is halted because the DCI, Richard Helms, he kind of freaks out. He's like, oh, shit, Nixon fucked up. The hammer's about to come down.
Yeah.
Better destroy all this evidence. And so he orders all evidence about the program be destroyed. So who knows what else they might have been doing, because all of this that we've assembled is public information, but who knows what got destroyed. There's 20,000 documents which were incorrectly stored by the CIA in a financial records building, however, so those escaped the axe. December 1974, there's a New York Times article which basically like sounds the air horn about like the illegal and non-consensual experimentation occurring on American civilians by the CIA, which prompts 1975 the Church Committee investigations under Idaho Senator Frank Church, where they investigate like the CIA and the FBI and a bunch of shit that the American public had no idea was happening, comes to the forefront. Like, there's a whole, we've touched on things that have been uncovered by the Church Committee episode.
All the Frank Hampton stuff.
Fred, all that stuff.
COINTELPRO, all that shit, the Church Committee.
Yeah. They deserve an episode in its own right. Multiple, perhaps. Anyway. And regarding MKUltra, initially they relied on like sworn witness testimony because they didn't have any documents, but then those incorrectly stored documents found in stored in the financial records building, they are found in 1977, so they're able to build a little more evidence and uncover what exactly occurred, right? And then subsequently, Presidents Ford, Carter, and Reagan all give various executive orders banning any human experimentation, but I guess not at Guantanamo, right?
That's a whole nother different story.
That's a whole nother different story.
Yeah,
different.
I mean, what is torture?
I think we know, but you can put on your what was it? You can put on your jacket. You can put on your
sports coat and just be.
You can ask questions. But what qualifies as torture exactly? You can pull your pinky up and you can. And it's like, okay, dude, I guess now I gotta.
Yeah, no. If you have to ask, you've gone too far.
You're an asshole.
Yeah, I mean, yep. That's how it goes. Well, also, and like, there are mad people on, well, not mad people, but there are people still on news network trying to tell us about what to do in this world that were part of that torture campaign. So, so that's the whole thing. And guys, that's been our episode on MKUltra. We want to thank you for listening. Thank you for Henry for doing a great job on kind of breaking that down for us. Got too into it, I will say. Got a little bit too into.
It's a fun one, man.
It was a fun episode.
Again, everybody needs to trip once.
Okay, all right, guys.
Everybody needs to once in safe conditions. Don't sign up for MKUltra, but you know.
Yeah.
Call your weird friend. Let me say that. All right.
Guys,
please, or just go to Colorado where it's legal, or Portland, wherever.
Well, it's legal.
Like, dude, say, is LSD don't put legal? Yourself in legal danger. Let me say that.
Is LSD legal in Portland? And I mean, I know in Portland.
I know Portland. Heroin's legal in is it Oregon. Legal? And so I'm pretty sure I think you can do it. I don't know the laws. But anyway. I know shrooms are legal in Colorado. If you drive to Colorado and you take mushrooms, will suffice. You'll understand what's going on. It's more natural. But
okay, all right, cool. Okay,
I'm gonna stop divulging. Now fuck myself.
Guys, thank you for listening. Who are we doing next week, Henry?
Next week, we are going to be looking at Russia in the 90s. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a fun time.
Quick.
Just the collapse of the Soviet Union and just a brief look at the highlights, the biggest events that kind of shook the nation and helped it transition from communism to capitalism and the specific nature of that capitalism.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's going to be a good episode. Quick overview. Not going to go too in depth because we don't have. Look, we don't do a do an 8-parter.
It's a lot of like financial theoretics, and I'm like, fuck, man, I don't.
Do you understand how to say the word perestroika?
Perestroika. Glasnost. Okay. Yeah, man. Right. That's what I learned researching this one. I learned how to pronounce Russian things more than I did anything else, and I'm sorry.
It's not Russia. It is Russia. Okay, Russia. Guys. That's been our episode. Thank you for listening. Please like, follow, share, subscribe. You know, follow us at Hard Fried History on Instagram and Facebook. HFH Podcast on Twitter. Follow me at Joshua B. Stokes on Instagram and Twitter. Follow me at Joshua Stokes on Facebook. Henry, where can they follow you at?
I'm just Henry E. Price on IG and Henry Price on Facebook.
Okay.
You got shows, Josh? You got anything?
We got shows.
You got anything on Thursday?
We're doing comedy. Huh? It's fun. Huh? It's a fun time. We're having a good time. You know, we're having a good time. We're in masks. Try to stay away from all these people, but they keep talking to me, and I don't like that.
And vaccinated. We're safe.
Yeah, right? We're vaxxed up. We're not playing that game.
Yes.
And I'm a Pfizer. Don't be a dipshit. I'm a Pfizer boy.
We're both Pfizer boys.
Yeah. None of that J&J bullshit.
It's a good life, right?
Yeah, none of that J&J bullshit. All right.
I'm trying to get clots.
Get vaccinated. We'll see you next time.
Even if it's J&J.
It's very small clots.
It's very small. Let me also say that. I'm not trying to propel
small percentage of motherfuckers.
Small percentage of people.
Yeah, but...
Get any shot.
Get vaccinated.
Do that.
See you next time. All
right. Get vaccinated. Do psychedelics. That's
okay. No, because this is. I don't know who was hearing this.
That's the.
Get vaccinated. We'll see you.
The playbook.
Get vaccinated. Go outside. Have a beer, and we'll see you next time. Okay.
Have a beer with me, man.
No.
Let me know.
No.
What's up?
No. Bye. Peace. All right. We're done. We're done here. Bye.
I'm cool.